ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
David Spears, the host of Insiders, and ABC political lead, and Samantha Maiden, the national political editor for news.com.au. A very good morning to you both.
Good morning, Hamish.
Good morning.
So, it's been a messy week in federal politics. Has this been one of the more difficult weeks this government has lived through, Samantha Maiden?
Well, yes, although they did end the week with some important negotiations, as you've been discussing throughout the program, in relation to the NDIS and also in relation to the Industrial Relations Bill. But I think that overall, it has obviously been dominated by this controversy in relation to the immigration detainees that were released as a result of the High Court decision. And we saw, of course, the Attorney General turn what would have been an otherwise unremarkable press conference that probably would not have been incredibly widely reported into a massive story about him basically barking at a Sky News journalist. And I think that goes very clearly to the political management and problems that the government has right now, which is that they are struggling to grapple with a range of issues, but particularly in relation to this fallout of the High Court decision of, you know, basically political skills. And, you know, they're still struggling after a year where they devoted a lot of time, quite understandably, to resolving the issue around The Voice. And they've come to the end of the year and I think that they've found themselves in choppy waters.
David Spears, is it just mishandling the politics, or is it also the substance of the legal matters and the policy matters at the heart of what's occurred here in relation to immigration detainees being held indefinitely?
Look, I think there are fair policy questions to be raised, at least, about whether it could have done more sooner, could have been better prepared for this potential High Court outcome. Now, the government will argue, no, it moved as quickly as it could. But, look, I think that's a legitimate area of debate. So, yes, you can see why the opposition has been critical of not having more in place to prevent as many people being released or being released for as long as they have. The fact that five of those released have now been arrested, obviously caused the government more grief yesterday. It had hoped to tie this up in a bow and put it to bed with the passage of those preventative detention laws, which did go through Parliament this week. But the fact that these arrests happened, the Mark Dreyfus matter that he had to apologise for that Sam mentioned, all of that just kept it alive and kept the government under pressure on that issue.
Sam, is there a genuine argument that actually the government could have taken different steps along the way, that their submission, Commonwealth submission to the High Court wasn't strong enough? I think James Hume was making that argument. I think we also heard from Dan Tehan that they didn't actually really need to release all of these detainees. They could have just released the individual that was central to the claim.
Well, I mean, I think that's a terrible slur on the submissions that were made to the High Court. But look, on a more serious note, I think that there is a legitimate concern that they raised all of these potential problems in their submissions, right? So they basically said, if you go down this track, we're going to be left with this very difficult problem. Now, I have heard, I don't know if it's true, that they expected that the High Court would not come back with an answer so quickly. And of course, they were surprised by the decision to come back with an answer without providing reasons, something that was raised as a concern by two of the High Court judges, indeed, in their judgment. So perhaps they were caught on the hop, but they shouldn't have been, and they should have had a plan ready to respond to this decision as soon as it was made in terms of how they were going to practically deal with these detainees. And they have looked like they've been scrambling in relation to getting, ankle bracelets and all the rest of it. So, yes, I think that there is a legitimate question over whether or not they could have been better prepared, had legislation ready to go. I absolutely do.
David, do you think this just rolls on over the coming months, given that it would take quite a lot of time anyway to put in applications to have any of these people re-detained, and there's a significant number of them?
Well, I think it'll depend on whether more are arrested and the rate at which that's happened over the past week.
I think it's
week,
probably likely.
I suggest it's unfortunately likely. Then you've got the question of any challenges. Well, firstly, whether who is going to be successfully preventatively detained under the new regime. We'll be fascinated to see how that rolls out. Whether that scheme is then challenged by any of those who are locked up again, and you would expect the various lawyers that focus on this issue will be keen to challenge the new regime that's been put in place. How all that plays out, I think there is a strong likelihood that we'll be talking about this for a while yet.
Let's turn to the NDIS. You heard our conversation with Kurt Fearnley. David, what are the mechanics of what's been agreed here and what is now likely to happen because of these recommendations?
Look, I think it is an ambitious blueprint that's been laid out and a necessary move. Certainly Bruce Bonahady, Lisa Paul. The unusual thing about this long-running review they've done is they've done it very openly with the sector. So there's been buy-in from the start, and you heard Kurt Fearnley talk about the process from here, importantly involving the sector as well. I think, you know, there's wide agreement that there needs to be this. It was often called a second tier to the NDIS. It's being called foundational supports, this new system that the states and the Commonwealth, importantly, will co-fund. Now, exactly what that looks like, we don't know. Exactly how many people will end up on these foundational supports at school or childcare as opposed to the NDIS is unknown. And while I get what Kurt Fearnley said to you, that it's doing a disservice to the community to solve this problem before we start this process over the next 5 years, fair enough. But the problem is the government has already banked the savings from this in its budget. It has said that it will achieve an 8% growth target, bring the growth of the NDIS from 14 down to 8, that it'll save $60 billion nearly over the next decade. So it's already banked that saving. And yet it's not able to say with much detail how many people are going to shift from the NDIS to foundational support, how it's going to work. It's difficult, but this is a necessary start, I suppose I'd put it that way, to this sort of reform.
Sam, can you tell us what a foundational support actually is?
Well, basically, I don't pretend to be an expert on foundational support, but what I can tell you is that the baseline problem is that this was meant to be a scheme that was 50-50 with the states, and there's a good deal of evidence that they started to withdraw services that were previously been offered on the ground. So, for example, in Tasmania, they wound back support on a state level for autism. What has that meant? It's meant that a whole bunch of families, quite understandably, have said, oh, we better get an NDIS package, right? So the idea of foundational support, in part, is also about the idea of making the states step up to the plate. And they've, come to this complicated arrangement around the GST and health funding to try to make the states tip more money into that.
Just on that, Hamish, the foundational support idea, and as I say, a lot of details to come on this, but in the school setting, for example, it would be what's called a lead practitioner. That might be a speech therapist, it might be an occupational therapist, who then coordinates other wraparound care for the kids who need it, those with developmental delays and so on, who don't qualify for the NDIS. Same sort of thing in the childcare setting. But even before then, the long-term plan here is to have universal screening of all infants at about the age of 6 months. Bill Shorten likened this to getting your immunisation jabs, your hearing test when you're an infant. You screen everyone, every baby. Those who are identified as in need of high levels of support obviously go onto the NDIS, and those with a lower level of need, those foundational supports start to kick in. That's a huge transformation itself, but early intervention and getting people on the right track could end up saving the nation a hell of a lot down the track.
And I actually think that is common sense. Like the idea that we're forcing every family that basically has a child that, for example, they don't like to always talk about specific examples, but autism, right? Families that are under huge pressure and absolutely need support. But the idea that they're forcing all of those people to get an NDIS plan, that is not the way the NDIS was originally conceived. It just wasn't.
And equally, there's a lot of families out there who at the moment spend thousands and thousands of dollars, getting tests for their kids. A lot of families can't afford to do that. If we could have a system that identified kids who do have developmental needs or autism or something more serious, you can get those supports flowing a lot earlier, and that's going to be a game changer.
This is RN Breakfast talking to Sam Maiden from news.com.au and David Spears from Insiders. We're about to speak to David Pocock in a few minutes' time. It was a bit of a surprise yesterday when the government announced that it had reached a deal on the industrial relations bill with Pocock and also Senator Jackie Lambie. Sam, were you expecting this to arrive at this point in time?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was a little bit quicker than people expected. And, obviously on paper it's a win. I do wonder a little bit about if it's one of those things where you you know, win the battle and lose the war, because they've now got these powerful enemies assembled against them. Now, I'm not saying that the legislation doesn't have, you know, reasons to come into being. Of course, a lot of it actually goes back to, you remember all of those terrible stories about wage rip-offs and terrible things that were happening to workers that shouldn't happen. But, you know, we've now got a sense that it's got a bit of a whiff of Julia Gillard about it. They've got the Minerals Council lined up against them. They've got Qantas lined up against them. I mean, I don't think anyone's a big fan of Qantas these days. But, you know, they've got people that are cashed up, right, that are concerned about this and that are going to be noisy critics of the government. So I think that's just a bit of an interesting thing sailing into next year.
David, who have you got on Insiders on Sunday?
The NDIS Minister, Bill Shorten, joins us. A big reform, so lots to talk about Sunday morning.
Thank you to both of you.
Thanks,
mate. Thank you, bye.
David Spears is the host of Insiders. Samantha Maiden is the national political editor for news.com.au.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.